everybody, and here is another episode of the Rose Quinn podcast. Hopefully you already knew that, otherwise it would be really confusing that you would be listening to this. This week I have the lovely Danielle Gerard on the podcast. She is the author of 13 novels. You guys, 13 novels. And we'll talk a little bit more about her later, because she's amazing. But first, I'm going to tell you about my favorite book of the episode. It is The Gender Game by Bella Forrest. And it is part of a series. Well, it's the first one in a series. Comped with The Hunger Games and Divergent. And it's from a few years ago. It came out in 2016. And I read it on Kindle Unlimited because you know that's my favorite. Let me go ahead and read you the blurb. And then I'll tell you what I thought about it. I mean, you know it's good because it's my favorite book of the week, right? A Toxic River Divides 19-year-old Violet Bates' World by Gender. Women rule the East, men rule the West. Welcome to the lands of Mattress and Patris. Ever since the disappearance of her beloved younger brother, Violet's life has been consumed by an anger she struggles to control. Already a prisoner to her own nation, now she has been sentenced to death for her crimes. But one decision could save her life. To enter the kingdom of Patris, where men rule and women submit. Everything about the patriarchy is dangerous for a rebellious girl like Violet. She cannot break the rules if she wishes to stay alive, but abiding by rules has never been her strong suit, and when she is thrust into more danger than she could have ever predicted, Violet is forced to sacrifice many things in the Forbidden Kingdom, including forbidden love. In a world divided by gender, only the strongest survive. You guys, forbidden love is like my absolute favorite thing in the whole world. Give me all of the forbidden love. I think this book is comped well by The Hunger Games and Divergent, but, and I'm sorry, I might anger people, Divergent made me so mad at the end of that series, so I have a hard time talking about it sometimes. But I really loved the way this author creates a world that is obviously very different from our own, although some would probably argue different, but we're not going to get into that. Not so different, but we're not going to get into it. And I think Violet is a girl who we all have a lot to relate to. She's gone through hard things in her life, lost people she's loved, lives in a land where she doesn't really have any control over her own self, right? And she's forced to go to this other land that's literally completely opposite from her life that she's known and figure out what to do about it. It's a really great series, and you'll really enjoy it if you love, you know, that YA fantasy, and you'll really love it if you love that YA fantasy vibe that is really going on right now. So, my favorite book is The Gender Game by Bella Forrest, and you guys should go check it out. My lit chit-chat this week is about active and passive voice. Now, I'll be honest with y'all, this isn't really something that I thought about until I was revising my last novel, and I was like, oh, I'm a really passive voice writer, which is a little bit unfortunate, right? So I went and I did some research, because some of the, like, if you Google active versus passive voice or just passive voice, it is explained in a really confusing way, for me at least. I, like, need it broken down. So I feel like a lot of those posts just made it very convoluted, and I just got more confused. I was like, I don't know what you're trying to tell me. So I'm sure there are lots of you listening who are active voice pros, and I love it. DM me, tell me your tricks and your tips. So this little chat might not be for you, but it's for me, and it's for those other people out there who are not active voice pros, right? So we're going to start with passive voice first. So passive voice is when a subject is acted upon. And I found it interesting that the passive voice always includes a conjugated form of to be. And did you know that there are lots of different forms of to be depending on the tense you are using? It could be am, could be are, could be is, was, were, being, been. I created some example sentences. You guys, this might be my most like legit lit chit chat we've had on the podcast. So my passive voice examples are: latex gloves are adored by serial killers. The evidence bags were counted by the officer. The girl was chased by the killer. So the passive voice formula is object plus a form of to be plus the past participle, like in the first sentence, the object is latex gloves, are, which is the form of to be, plus adored in the past tense, right? Plus a preposition, which in all of these is by, and then plus the subject. And I'm going to post this on my website because I realize that me saying this all to you might be a little confusing. But doesn't that seem like a little bit confusing, that formula, right? So how do we switch it to active voice? Active voice is simply when a subject acts upon its verb. So latex gloves are adored by serial killers becomes serial killers adore latex gloves, right? The evidence bags were counted by the officer becomes the officer counted the evidence bags. The girl was chased by the killer becomes the killer chased the girl. They all are a little bit more concise, a little bit more clear, right? So the active voice formula is super simple. Subject plus verb plus object. Yeah, right? And we don't need that preposition by anymore. You know, active voice is definitely preferred because it is stronger, it's more direct, it's clearer. And as you could tell in these, you know, example killer sentences that I made, the subjects are taking action, which is what we want in our novels, right? We want our characters, our everything to be taking action, not just being acted upon. So we want serial killers to adore latex gloves. We don't want latex gloves are adored by serial killers. Boom. There we go. The world's simplest crash course on passive versus active voice is now complete, and I hope it wasn't the most confusing one also for you. Now, we're going to get to Danielle. She is an amazing person, and you guys are going to love this interview. She is the USA Today and Amazon number one best-selling author of 13 novels, including the Dr. Schwartzman series, which is the one that we're going to highlight today. And she has won the Barry Award, the RT Reviewer's Choice Award, and two of her titles have been optioned for movies. She's got a lot under her belt, and she's, you know, not done yet. So she has a new book coming out next July, 2020. Cold as Ice is the title. And the series that she just finished is the Dr. Schwartzman series. It has four books, and I love the names. I love it when, like, all the names line up and are so great. So it's Exhume, Excise, Expose, Expire. Woo-hoo, I love it. So her last one that just came out was Expire, which I actually got the chance to read without having read the first three. And I think, you know, and like authors are always so talented when they can make it so you could dive into any book in the series and still feel like you know what's going on and you could read it and not be like terribly confused. So Danielle does that really good. But now that the whole series is out, you could go back and start at Exhume and read on from there. And I'm going to read you the blurb for Exhume. Dr. Annabelle Schwartzman, Dr. Schwartzman series, guys, has finally found a place to belong. As the medical examiner for the San Francisco Police Department, working alongside homicide detective Hal Harris, she uncovers the tales the dead can't tell about their final moments. It is a job that gives her purpose and a safe haven from her former life at the hands of an abusive husband. Although it's been 7 years since she escaped that ordeal, she still checks over her shoulder to make sure no one is behind her. Schwartzman's latest case is deeply troubling. The victim bears an eerie resemblance to herself, What's more, a shocking piece of evidence suggests that the killer's business is far from over and that Swartzman may be in danger. In this pulse-pounding thriller from award-winning writer Danielle Gerard, a woman must face her worst nightmare to catch a killer. You guys, best believe me when I tell you that Danielle is an amazing author and you will thoroughly enjoy these books. So go ahead and add Exhume and the whole Dr. Swartzman series to your to-be-read list, even though I'm sure it's a mile long like mine. But let's go ahead and get started with the interview and get to know Danielle. Danielle, can you tell us about your most recent novel, Expire, and the series that is concluding?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So Expire is the fourth book, the final book in the Dr. Swartzman series. And Annabelle Swartzman is a medical examiner in San Francisco, and she has a dark and sort of troubled past. She was married to an abusive man, and he, despite the fact that they are no longer together, he will not leave her alone. And so through each book in the series, he is sort of in the background. There's a main mystery that Annabelle is solving, and then Spencer is sort of this ongoing threat who comes in and out of sort of proximity. Mm. In Expire, when the book opens, she has been kidnapped and is being held in a cabin in rural Idaho, and she suspects Spencer is behind it. In fact, there's a little bit more to it, which I won't give away.
Yeah.
But she has to use her wit to figure out how to get free before, before he shows up. I'll leave it at that. So that was really an interesting book for me to write because it is such a sort of claustrophobic feeling, right? She's in a cabin by herself. Most of the books have really featured her in relationships with, for instance, the homicide inspector, Hal Harris, who becomes a love interest, and obviously the other people, the inspectors in homicide and other departments who she works with. So this book was really Annabelle on her own in this cabin. And I loved writing it. It was just a really different book, and I'm super excited about how it turned out, and readers seem to be super pleased as well. So that's been really fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. I always get, I feel like I get arcs a lot of times that are like this. Like, I haven't read the first three of the series, but I always get, like, weirdly placed, but I love that I could jump into it and still enjoy it, even not having read the first three. I think that was really awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, you kind of make each book a standalone because people do come into the series, and sometimes they read the fourth book and then go back and read the first three, and other times they read, them in a different order, and if you can do that, I think it's, and also, even if people are reading them in order, there's a year between books. You can't, expect somebody to remember the details. You kind of have to sort of start as though they're coming to it fresh, which we all are, because, people are reading lots of books, and I can hardly keep track, so how could they?
Right. So. It's a lot. Well, yeah. Awesome. And then you have a new series that's coming out July 2020.
Yes, so I finished with Annabelle Swartzman, and all of my books, Expire is my 13th novel, and this next series is brand new for me. The first book is called Whiteout, and it's actually a departure. Most of my books have been centered on law enforcement and set in San Francisco, which is where I grew up, and this book is set in a small town in North Dakota, so the main characters, she is a nurse wakes up without any memory, and he is served in Afghanistan. And both of them are dealing with, he had traumatic brain injury, and she's got amnesia, and they're dealing with, there's obviously a dead body, and who killed her, and anyway, I'm really excited. It's a very different type of book for me, and I'm still kind of working through my revisions on it, but it will be out, I think, July 8th of 2020. So.
Wow. That one sounds awesome, too. I can't wait to read that.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So that'll be your 14th novel. So you have a lot of books under your belt. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to getting that first book published and then to where you are now?
Absolutely. So I was I'm a firstborn. I don't know if you're one of the people who follows, like, birth order, but I'm sort of a big believer in birth order because I was firstborn and my parents were like, okay, well, you can be a doctor or a business person. And I was like, oh, okay, you know. I was not allowed to study writing. That wasn't a real job. In fact, my parents really did not think that was a real job until, you know, way more recently, even than it had become a real job for me.
Right.
I worked in finance, which is, of course, one of the, I actually was pre-med, applied to medical school, decided, yeah, I wasn't sure I wanted to be a doctor. So then I went into finance, where I spent 10 years, and I wrote my first books while I was working in finance. And I have 3 books buried in the backyard that will never see the light of day. Turned out they were terrible. I thought they were good at the time, but then in hindsight, they were not. But
right.
The fourth book was Savage Art, and that was the first book I sold. That book came out in 2000, so I've also been at this, right, a long time.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I've had, you know, I always tell people this process of writing is very much a process of being, you can say, determined, or in my case, just plain stubborn. I think you have to just write and write and write. And I have a folder of rejection letters that I'm not exaggerating, it's 4 inches thick. Of course, I was publishing in the days when, first publishing, when rejections came in the mail. So
right.
You had to wait forever for them, and oftentimes it was just a photocopied letter, and occasionally there was a little note on it. But I had collected those, and I think there's for sure over 100 of them. I always imagine that someday I'm going to make a beautiful coffee table book of them, or wallpaper a bathroom. I have, you know, but for now they're just in my drawer. So I have, and I published, traditionally Penguin Putnam did my first 5 books, and then I did a couple on my own, and now I'm with a subset of Amazon Publishing. So I've kind of also done it every which way. I love telling stories. You know, the thing is, even in the times when I thought, I'm not going to be a writer anymore, it's too hard, which there have been those times, because it is a really challenging business to be in.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are more and more people writing books and fewer books sort of getting support of publishing, and so it can, you know, it can be disheartening, but every time I've stopped doing it, I wake up in the middle of the night with, like, some idea that just will not let go, and so there I am back at the computer in the basement, creating, you know, some creepy story, and that's, I'm feeling very lucky now, 19 years into it, to do it full-time, to have a publisher who's super supportive, and 14 books is, well, there'll be 14 books in 2020, so.
That's amazing. I think being stubborn and being persistent is definitely something you need to have to to get through the whole part of it, the writing the book, the revisions, the querying, the publishing part, and the waiting.
Yeah.
I think you just gotta never stop, and especially always keep writing, you know. I think
exactly, and I think it's a lesson for anything you want to do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think my children, my children are now 17 and 19, and they have seen me, you know, get rejections and get bad reviews, and they've seen me get great reviews, and they've seen me win awards. But, you know, they've seen sort of both sides of that, and I'd like to think that they're well equipped for, you know, the failures that are natural in life. You don't do anything well without failing at it a bunch of times first.
Yeah.
Is my opinion. So, so you have, determination is key. And not to say that when the bad news happens, I don't still, you know, I don't pour a glass of wine and eat a pint of ice cream, but I for sure do that too.
Yeah.
And that's the natural balance.
Yes, that's the healthy part. You gotta yeah. Allow yourself to feel both things.
Yep, absolutely.
So, would you be able to tell us a little bit about how querying went for you? Obviously,
yeah.
I'm assuming you had to send, like, paper letters.
I know, it's almost impossible to imagine what that was like.
Yeah.
But yes, I did send a lot of query letters. I actually queried, I'm with an agent that I have wanted to work with for literally 20 years. I think it was 20 years from the first time I queried her until this time. So I've done queries, and that was 5 years ago, but I have done them even more recently than my
your initial
career would suggest. Yes. And you know, I think the thing about querying is just really boiling your story down to its heart, and that is a really hard thing to do.
Definitely.
We always think we want to explain how things unfold, what the plot is, and really, I think it's more the hook that an agent or an editor want to see, because if you have a really strong premise or a hook, I mean, you know all these books right now that, like, The Chain and this strange, series of chain letters where these kids are kidnapped, and, I mean, that's an insane premise, but that piece of it is what an editor or an agent is going to attach to.
Yeah.
Who you are as an author and the premise of the book. And then it helps to say if you've won contests or awards or how many other books you might have, or if you're working on another book in the series, but I think short and sweet. And like I said also, I mean, the rejection is natural and it's going to happen, and you've got to figure out a way to deal with that as well. And I also think you have to keep writing. Like you said, you have to write the next book.
Yes.
You can query one book for a year and end up, not ever selling that book. And if you waited a year to kind of start the next thing, then it's a year you didn't need to. So I think also you can sell your third book, and then maybe your first books are really, are good, and then you can sell those sort of after the third one. So you never know. I think query and then try to set that out of your mind and keep writing.
Yes. Send your query in little batches, but keep writing so that you're not constantly dying from anxiety of when a new email pops in to your email.
Exactly. And I think the little batches is smart too. Send them a few at a time to the people that you really would like to work with, and then, learn a little more about what you're working on, keep writing, send a few more, and know that it's not abnormal to have hundreds of rejection letters. I think that's the way the world works. And you can query the same agent again with a new book. So that's another reason to keep writing.
Yeah. And I think too, for everybody, your writing gets better as you keep doing it, as you put more under your belt and as you continue to write more worlds. So like you said, maybe this one you're querying right now won't sell, but the next one or the next one will, and then you can go back and they'll love the story that you wrote beforehand.
That is exactly right. I think you just have to keep writing.
Yep.
You have to keep writing.
Just keep writing, people.
Keep writing. And they said, Malcolm Gladwell was the one who said it takes 10,000 hours to master something, and I am for sure 10,000 hours into my writing career. I don't feel like a master, but compared to where I started, and the difference is enormous.
Yeah.
So another reason, like you said, to just keep writing, because you do get better. Of course you do.
Definitely.
Yep.
Well, on the topic of writing, what's the hardest part of writing for you, and then what's the hardest part of being an author?
I so love what I do. I have to start by saying I'm super grateful, and but of course it's hard. I mean, and I the hardest part for me used to be revising, because I'm not a blocked writer, but that said, what would come out the first round was really kind of rough. It's a terrible first draft kind of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be, so I was so having so much fun telling the story that the revising part of it was a little harder. I've kind of come to, after this many books, I've done a lot of revisions, I've come to sort of accept that part of the process, and it's different. It's sort of, for me, it's a little more, it's slower, a little bit more structured. So I would say that's tougher than the writing for me, but the hardest part is probably, like anything, just sort of like when you get a bad review or, the bad reviews, you're not supposed to read those. I know you're not supposed to read your reviews. That's like another rule.
Yeah.
But I read every review because I have zero self-control when it comes to them, and if there's a new one, I'm like, oh my God, did they love it? So that's hard. I think the rejection part of it is hard. And it's not so much that when somebody says, oh, it wasn't for me, I had somebody say recently that they gave my book a 4 instead of a 5 because the sex scene wasn't detailed enough. And I was like,
oh my gosh.
I can take that. That's okay. I do not do detailed I actually don't have a lot of romance in my books, so I don't do detailed sex scenes. So that was like, okay. It's the ones that are hard, that are mean, you know, that are attracting those people, and then you have to say, okay, well, that person is the his or her computer and judge, but they're not, you know, you can, I can't pay attention to that, you know, because they're not doing what I'm doing. So, but it doesn't always make it easier. So that's probably the hardest part of being an author. The hardest part of the writing can be when, you know, when the story sticks and you're like, God, what it, you know, or you figure out you've gone on the wrong direction. And that's just a matter of being, I have done it where I've just written right through that. I've been like, you know what, I don't, maybe it's not the wrong direction. And then I've gotten another 50 pages and been like, yep, it was the wrong direction. So I kind of think, you know, you have to, there are times when you have to sort of do one step forward, five steps back. And I again, you sort of get to know your instincts when you think you're going the wrong way. And my suggestion to that is to listen to those, because it's a really solitary process. There's nobody sitting there saying, oh, you know, maybe you didn't want to do that right. way. Or, you know, maybe, so, and the solitary part is hard, right? I mean, I remember when I was first writing, I was like, I would write five pages and I'd print them and give them to my husband, like, could you read this? And tell me, what do you think right now? And that, you know, it's just because we're so used to it in every part of life being this sort of immediate gratification or feedback. You know, you're in school, you turn it in, you get it back, and now you're in a place where literally you write for months without anybody checking your progress or looking over your shoulder, and that can be intimidating. I know a lot of authors have writers groups that they work with, and I have done that too. I have found that a little tricky as well, because sometimes what they say ends up having an impact on what I do, where it wouldn't, you know, they suggest one direction and I end up going in a direction that isn't sort of, wouldn't have been natural for me. So I do sort of stick with the really writing on my own with, you know, I talk through some plot points and that kind of thing with writer friends, but I do most of it on my own, and that's for better or worse. Sometimes it works really well, and sometimes it turns out that I did actually make a wrong turn, or my editor thinks there's another way to go about it that would be stronger for the book, and then, you know, we revise. I think no matter what happens, I end up doing big revisions, so that might just be my process.
Yeah, I think writing groups can be super helpful. I think it is hard to find good writing groups. And once you find one, and I think, you know, the most beneficial thing is just critique partners, and maybe not in like a random setting where you don't know these people and what they're, you know, capable of or what they like, their strengths and weaknesses. I think writing groups can be very good and also can be harmful.
Yeah. It's just finding, I think it's always finding what works for you. And I have been through periods where that was really helpful, and then periods where it was less helpful, and periods where I haven't used them at all. So I try to sort of figure out where I am and what I need to support the book and the process and go with it. Because that's, you know, in the end, those are the key elements. If I don't have a good process, then I don't have a good book.
Right. So I'm going to flip that question on you. I asked you about the hardest parts, but now I want to ask you, what is the best part of being a writer and being an author for you?
So it's funny, my family will tease me. Sometimes we'll be sitting all together, and I'll be sort of staring up at the ceiling, and my family will be like, what's going on, Mom? Who are you seeing up there? You know, because I think when you're working on a book, and maybe it's truer if you're working on a book that's a really sort of intense, emotional, and psychological book, which writing thrillers, for one, is because, of course, the stakes are life and death, and so everything's a little bit more intense. In addition, you know, I like to write a fast-paced book. That pacing is really important to me. I want the kind of book where you're like, it's midnight and I need to go to bed, but I'm going to read one more chapter, you know?
Yes.
The best part of it really is just, I really do love to just be in my own head. I love to be alone. I mean, I'm a very social person and not at all shy, but I really love that. I love to spend those stories, and I love building a world and giving people elements that make them feel real. I mean, issues and quirks, and so they're not just, they're not all hero and they're not all villain. Yeah. I think everybody is a mix. Yeah. And that is, for me, that's just a really, really fun job. Yeah, I mean, that's what I think I love the most. And it's so fun when you finish it and you know, the last thing I do after all the revisions and all the copy edits and page proofs and everything is before I, you know, say, okay, it's good to go to print, I just sit down somewhere with like a block of time and I read the whole thing start to finish. And by then it's probably been a month since I finished sort of a revision where I was really into it, and I'm likely rewriting another book, so mm-hmm. you kind of go back in time. And it is so fun to see, oh my God, I cannot believe the stuff you come up with. You are so crazy. So you created something, you know, and you're putting it into the world, and that's a really good feeling, too.
That is definitely the best feeling, is reading your entire novel and being like, whoa, look what I just did here. Like, look what I accomplished.
I know. That is a good feeling. It's a good feeling every time. It doesn't diminish. It hasn't for me. I don't know what, you know, I have no idea what it's like when you've written 100 books, but at 14, it's still a really, really good feeling.
That's awesome. Well, my next question is about your writing style. So I want to know if you're more of a pantser or a planner or somewhere in between.
Yeah, I've done it kind of both ways. I guess I'm a planner in terms of, I think, the big story. That is sort of the plot, the major plot twist, what's really going on behind the scenes. But I have found that recently, and I just did this in Whiteout, which is the book that I'm revising for next July, at the very end, sort of the who did it flipped for me, and I was like, oh. And then you have to kind of go back, of course, and make sure that you're not cheating any readers, because I can't stand it when you're like, wait a minute, that person wasn't even in the book, you know, and it's not like that. But I do tend to, just so I have a roadmap again, because I feel like if I don't have that roadmap, I might end up in Alaska when I was heading to Florida, and that's not ideal. And the other thing I pants for sure is the scenes. You know, I know that there's a piece of information that has to come out, or there's a discovery that has to be made, but how that happens and where's the best place for that to happen, that all just happens, you know, it happens in the writing, and sometimes not the first version of that scene or chapter, but I don't plan those out. I just try to imagine sort of what's the most interesting way for this information to be revealed. So I know some people are like, chapter one has this and chapter two has that, and right. I'm not at all to that extent, but sort of overarching, you know, what's going on here and what do we have to know about, and usually kind of who did it is sort of mapped out, and not maybe always from the time I wrote the first page. I used to really write from page one to the end, like always forward. I could never write a scene that came later. I might know it and might jot down some notes, but I would never let myself write that scene. And now I'm like, let's write it. We have it. It's clear. You know, it's words I can put down. I'll feel good. So I don't have those rules anymore. And I use Scrivener, which I don't know if you do. You use Scrivener?
I don't. I use something called Dabble, which is
okay. Maybe it's similar. The thing I love about Scrivener is you can just drag and drop those things around. So I can, you know, I can have chapter. I know this scene happens kind of around 2/3 through the book, and then if I end up a little higher, a little lower, you just move them around. And I, you know, word is just the cut and paste, and keeping track of things is a lot. Just takes more time, and I've done that. I've done that for lots of books, but this sort of helps me at least in the real draft stage. So, so I just write. I'll write. If there's a scene in my mind that I feels really vivid and exciting, and then I'll write it. And then I kind of move forward and backward until it's like putting together a puzzle. You know, sometimes you have one side of it and then the other side, and eventually you fill it all in and it's solid. So that's sort of how I work now.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you're a planner for some aspects of it and then a pantser for some as well. I think that like it seems it just gives you a little bit more freedom to be, let the creative you know, mind work the way it needs to.
Yeah, it really works well for me. And I the pantsing thing, I've never really been able to pants completely. I don't know how people do that. That's clever. You have to really keep a lot of things in your head. And that's, I think, for me, your recipe for disaster.
Well, and I think when you write certain types of books, like, you know, mysteries and with the whodunit and all of that, you need to have some notes written down to keep track of everything, in my opinion.
Yeah. If you don't, right, exactly. If you don't know, if you don't remember where you planted that, that first clue, exactly.
Definitely. So my next question for you is, when did your love of writing begin? So, you know, you were talking about how your parents were like, oh, you're the firstborn, so you can be a doctor or a businessman. And how did that, you know, love of storytelling blossom?
Well, you know, so my dad was an incredible storyteller. He was a physician, and he just had such an incredible bedside manner. And I think my love of story evolved from him and from... We're four children, although we're really spread out. So the reason I always joke about the birth order is that my baby brother, same parents, is 17 years younger than I am.
Wow.
And he went to, he went to NYU Film School. So writing wasn't a job, but by the time they got to my brother, they're like, sure, go study how to make movies. That's great. So I think we're all kind of storytellers in our own way. My sister's hilarious, and my other brother's incredibly talented storyteller and also an artist. So we're kind of all this, ironically, right, for my parents, who were like, no art.
Right.
Art is not a job. Everybody ended up being kind of an artist, so maybe that was the rebellion in us. But I always loved stories. I wasn't like a massive reader as a kid, although I kind of read all the Agatha Christie and all that kind of stuff in high school. And I took one creative writing class in college, which I really loved. But again, you know, it wasn't on my pre-med agenda.
Right.
So the way it started actually is that my husband and I were just early married. Like, I was like 23. And we were living in the Midwest, which is not where either of us is from. And he was working in hotel management, and I was working in finance. So he had these crazy hours. You know, he would be at work until midnight. So I would come home from my job in finance, and I would just write in the evenings. And I would, you know, four books that way. And, you know, obviously we didn't have any children, and life was really, you know, quiet, and it just gave me something to do. And it was funny because I had met a writer in my finance job, and I was just picking her brain. I'm like, how did you do it? What did you, you know, she's like, just go sit down and write, start a story. And she is a romance writer. And on page five, somebody died. And so I said, oh my God, this was my first pages. And of course, that's back in the days when I was like, could you read it? Can you tell me what you think? And she was very gracious. We're still really good friends. And she read it, and she's like, well, you're not writing romance. And that was, you know, I was like, I know, there's like a dead guy on page five. And it's just, that's been it the way it has been ever since. I don't know. It wasn't that I set out to write a suspense novel, but I think it is. I'm so drawn by that tension and the pace and the stakes, and so then from then on, I was kind of addicted. I had a day job, and I wrote my first book came out when my daughter was 8 months old, and my son was not yet born. So I did a lot of that writing, you know. At night, even with babies, that was hard. And, you know, I was slower then because publishing a book a year just was not going to be possible at that point. So, but, you know, I just kept at it, and I sold those books and kept writing and I found what I loved, and I kept doing it. Eventually, my parents were like, okay, so maybe writing could be a career. I'm like, really? Thank you.
Maybe this is something you could do.
I was like, well, not that I really need your approval now, but it sure is nice to have. So that's how it started. I think it's been there all along. I used to write really long, crazy letters home from college to my parents, but also to sort of our close group of high school friends, and I would make things up about what everyone was doing on campus because I was the only person who was good at writing. So I'd be like, I haven't heard from any of you, so here's what I suspect Hillary's up to, or, you know. And that was just a source of, you know, it was just for fun. But I do, I think I've always simply loved to write. But yeah, that's sort of how the book writing evolved.
I love it. I think that's, you know, I think a lot of people who have day jobs and do other things full time find ways to fit it into their schedule. And, you know, for me, it's always been a very therapeutic thing too. You know, I can shut myself out of my like anxiety riddled brain and write and calm down, which is nice.
Exactly. And I think that's probably, you know, I'm a worst case scenario thinker. It's sort of just like, you know, literally crossing the street and I can imagine like six ways in which it's going to go totally wrong. And so I think that's where the suspense probably stuff comes up too. It's,
yeah.
You know, how does somebody end up dead? Well, there's a lot of ways, you know. So I think it does settle your anxiety as well. I mean, and working in a world that's not real, it's nice. It's a break, right? You don't have to worry about, you don't have to, at that moment, you don't have to worry about what's going on in the real world, which is increasingly frightening.
It is, yeah. You know? And I heard someone, I can't remember where I was, but they were talking about horror movies or horror novels, you know, with, you know, lots of people dying, serial killers, and like, I just can't imagine those people who think about death and who can write stories about death. And I just finished a book that is about a serial killer in a small town. So I was sitting there, I was like, am I like a weird person for like thinking about death and writing these sorts of novels? But, you know, I think it's just, I don't feel weird or like I'm super morbid. I think it's just, you're controlling this little world. And it kind of can help you deal with it a little bit better to be like, okay,
I don't think you're weird at all. Rose. I think you're perfectly normal.
Oh, good.
I have had people look at me and be like, "Why, you look kind of sweet. How do you write such stuff?" I'm like, I don't know. But the other joke is that my husband sleeps with one eye open.
So, that's funny.
You know, I don't cross me. I know how to kill you.
Right. You know all the ways that killing can happen.
I do. But I would be the first suspect. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I'd be the first suspect anyway because I'm the wife, but I would, on top of that, be the first suspect.
Because you write about it.
So, yeah, so that would not bode well. So, you know, plus, I mean, we've been married for 25 years this month, so.
That's awesome.
I'm going to keep him. He's worn in and all the right places.
That's good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Well.
That's another really important part of being a writer, I think, is having people who support your process. And obviously my parents were interested in me making sure I could support myself, and I appreciate that. But I think if the sort of feedback that writing isn't a real thing that you can do came from my husband, whom I was living with all the time, and not from my parents, whose home I no longer lived in, that would be hard. You know, you have to find, if it's not your partner, you have to find a group of people who really support your dream. Because otherwise, I think that is tough. That can be really tough.
I think it could be really hard. And I think even your partner needs to, on a certain level, just respect the desire and want to. Because that would be really hard to be with. Like, I can't imagine my husband being like, I don't really want you to write. It doesn't seem like a real career, you know? That would be super hard.
Yeah. It's not, I think that is a really, that makes it a really, I mean, ideally we have partners who support whatever we want to do.
Right.
But yeah, I've seen friends sort of go through that where they really struggle to find time to write because of what the other expectations are. And that's hard.
Definitely very hard.
Yeah.
Well, I have only two questions left. My second to last one is, what does your revision process look like? So, of course, you have, you know, your agent and your editor at your publisher who help you go through that process. But what do you do on your own before it gets to them to make sure your book is where it needs to be?
Well, I think the key on that, particularly sort of if you're not working with it, it's trickier on the schedule because you only have a little bit of time when you're done writing the book before it has to sort of get turned in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you can give yourself some time away from the book, even just 2 weeks where you don't think of, you're not writing it or revising it or thinking about it, and then come and then do that thing where you read all the way through. And rather than, like, get nitpicky on the words, I just use, like, a highlighter and I just circle things along the way and maybe write a note like, ooh, that, like, because there'll be a clue that I didn't pull forward or something,
right.
You know, and I'll just make the barest of notes about kind of what I think, feel like is going on. And then at the end of the writing session, I will kind of download sort of like some ideas about how I think things need to change, or revisions that need, ups need to be made, or scenes that didn't quite work for me, and then I sort of tackle those in a slower fashion. That's sort of my process. And then, of course, you know, I do have a whole nother revision process that happens. But once I can go through the book, and then if it takes me a lot of revision to get, you know, if there's a lot of things I find and they're bigger, then I will repeat that process. I will give it another, sometimes I can't wait 2 weeks, so I'll give it, you know, 10 days if I can, or a week if I, you know, if that's all I've got, or even 3 or 4 days, and just try to come back with that fresh brain and do the same thing again. And once I feel like it sort of passes that test, then I think it's ready to go on to somebody else. When I was trying to publish books, I do think you have to find somebody who is a really good reader of the whole book. And I think that's particularly true now when the world is so much more competitive than, you know, even than it ever has been, or maybe it's always been just crazy competitive, but you have to have somebody who can kind of read, because I think the thing of writing a book is that you take things for granted that a reader doesn't. So you're like, oh, I know, yeah, we all knew that, didn't we? Oh, no, we wouldn't have known that because I never told anybody. So it helps to have somebody who can read it. And then I also think it's worth investing in somebody who can search for typos and catch, you know, grammatical stuff, because you only have one opportunity to really make that first impression, and so you need that manuscript to be as clean as possible. And usually you can, you know, usually there's people, I mean, it's kind of amazing, people that are, you know, willing to read, and you could just, you know, buy them a gift certificate at a local restaurant, or, you know, there's people that they love to read, and so you have new material, and they sort of love to be, you know, love to be helpful. Find them at the library, you know, I mean, it's really, it doesn't have to be a hugely expensive process.
No.
So.
Yeah.
But I do think it's important.
I think that's super important, because I think what you said is perfect, like, you, as the author, you get so lost in, you know, everything, you know, the behind the scenes, you know, the background. So it's definitely good to have fresh eyes who's like, this doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. Yes. You need somebody to tell you that.
Yes. So. Well, awesome. I love to hear the revision process, because I think that's something a lot of people can get stuck in. And I myself have found like revisions where you're like, when do I stop? You know, like I kept going in a circle with one of my books where it was like never ending.
I know. That can be tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the other side of revisions. At some point you just have to let it go. You know,
yes.
You've done what you've done. And then that's, that's all you can do.
Right. You got to let it just sit and be a book and just leave it alone.
And start the new one, right? Yep. That's, you know, not the good time when you're like, I could do this one more time. Start the next one first, you know? And if you're not getting the feedback from the editors, you're not getting an agent who wants to represent you, then let it sit for a few months, write something new, and then come back to it, and you might be like, oh, my God, the solution is right here.
Right.
You know, again, I think our brains work so much better when we have a little distance from something, and that's true of, like, you know, as a mother of teenagers, that's true with everything.
Yes.
A little distance is a good thing. So
definitely.
I try to apply that as often as possible in as many places as possible.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, I only have one question for you left, and it is my favorite question. I want to know what your favorite book is right now. This is not your favorite book of all time, just a book you've read recently that you really loved.
You know what? I have to say, it's so funny because I read so many suspense novels, of course. First of all, I love them, which makes sense since I love to write them. But I also, I find that the books that sort of stick in my head are then the ones that are not suspense novels, because maybe it's just my brain is like, oh, this is actually kind of just a book I'm reading for pleasure.
Right.
So a book I read recently that was Night Circus. Erin Morgenson. Do you know that book?
I don't know that book.
It's kind of bad. I mean, it's magical realism set in a circus. It was just one of those books I just thought, oh my God, I'm having so much fun. It's so different from anything I do, and the writing is beautiful. And it was really fun. So that was, it's probably been 3 or 4 months since I read it, but it's just stuck with me. And when people have been asking me for a book, you know, a lot of my friends are not, like, huge thriller writers, so I'm always trying to find something. They're like, what should I read? I'm like, oh, I've got, like, 30 suspense novels I can tell you about. But I'm like, yeah, I've got one book that I can tell you about that's not a suspense novel. And that is, I would recommend that. That's a really, that's a magical book. It's really fun.
I love that. That's when you know it's a good book, when you've read it 3 or 4 months ago and it's still stuck in your head.
Exactly. No, exactly. And I now I'm like, okay, I need another one of those.
Yeah.
I'm ready for another, you know, little escape from the world of thrillers. So I'll find one.
Yes.
There's so many good, I mean, that's the other thing, right? There's so many good books. What about you? Can you answer that? You have a recommendation? What's your favorite book right now?
Oh my goodness, it's so hard.
To catch on the spot.
Yeah, I'm reading. I'm reading. I read a lot of crime fiction and thrillers too, but right now I'm reading Seeker by Kim Chance. It's a YA like witch book, which I love.
Oh.
I love witches. I'm like a sucker for them. It's the second in her series. It comes out in a couple weeks. And that's my favorite right now.
Oh, fun.
It's just
okay,
like,
I will check that out.
Yeah.
I think YA is really fun.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, it's books like you can read. I mean, for me, my kids are almost too old for them now, but I do love to read YA. And for years, I would pick the books, read them, and then pass them off to my children. But that is really fun. Okay, I will check it out, Seeker. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, you're fine.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Right? But yeah, I love books that are like a little lighter. It's got some,
yes,
you know, like,
yeah,
tension to it, but it's a little bit lighter for my brain, which it's away from all the murder and serial killers, which is nice.
Absolutely. I mean, particularly because, yeah, I mean, the YA, that's what it does. It just softens things a little bit because it can't be so edgy when it's for younger people. And sometimes I'm like, I could have the brain of a, you know, 14 or 15 year old this week. That's okay for me. Let's,
yeah,
do that.
Sometimes,
yeah,
we need,
great,
that. Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with me today and letting me get to know you more and telling us about your latest novel, Expire. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Oh, Rose, thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
All right, everybody. Wasn't Danielle wonderful? Make sure you go ahead and follow her on Instagram and Twitter and add her books to your list to watch out for. And watch out for her next one coming July 2020, Cold as Ice. And again, if you can rate and review this wherever you listen, that would be wonderful. If not, share about it, tweet about it, post it on Instagram, tag me. I'd love to know what you guys think about it. And reading reviews and just chatting with you guys who listen is like, literally makes my day every single time it happens. It never gets old. So thank you so much for listening, and you guys will hear from me next week.